You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Duncan, in for Beth Ruyak. Several large wildfires continue to burn across the state, and journalists have to cover the emergency as it unfolds in their own communities. For this week's News Network, we're checking in with two journalists covering the major wildfires in their areas. Later on, we'll check in with KZYX in Mendocino. But first, joining us right now is Jennifer Scarborough, Executive Director of News for KRCR Television in Reading. That's the local ABC affiliate. Jennifer, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, what is the latest on the ground for residents of Reading and the surrounding areas?
Well, in Reading, all the evacuations have been lifted, and most people were allowed to go back into the areas they'd been evacuated from over the weekend. My family was finally allowed to go back into our neighborhood on Saturday. And so much of Reading is, I think, moving from evacuation and weariness into the next phase, which is dealing with the grief of the loss and trying to figure out what to do next on a disaster of this scale. For the surrounding areas, there are a lot of people that are still evacuated. I don't have an exact number for you, but some of the more rural communities of Igo and Ono, those folks have been evacuated for a week and a half now. People in French Gulch have been evacuated for 2 weeks. And as of right now, there's not any sign that those folks are going to get back in yet. Lewiston, out in Trinity County, their firefighters are getting a little more confidence, they told us this morning, in the fire lines out there. Those lines are turning from X's into solid black lines, but they're not quite ready to necessarily lift that evacuation, at least not of this morning. And then there are folks out in Lakehead. There was a community meeting there yesterday. A week ago, last week, the fire was about 9 miles from Lakehead. It's creeped about 2 miles closer. It's about 7 miles from there now. So that's another community that, while not evacuated, is still very, very concerned. And, of course, people are worried. They saw what the fire did to Reading. So everyone is still on edge, particularly in those areas that are still evacuated or are in danger of potentially becoming evacuated.
And your staff actually became part of the story when you were forced to evacuate KRCR, the studios. I think that was a decision you guys made for safety reasons on July 26th. How have the employees been dealing with this stress of covering a disaster that may have affected them personally?
Well, I think I think for most people it's different for every person, and I think everyone has dealt with it in different ways. Now that the evacuations are lifted and most people are home, things are much, much better for everyone. In those initial few days, speaking for myself, it was incredibly difficult. I was not home when my husband and my children evacuated. Our home is right where the fire tornado went through. So when I got down, when I left work and I went down to try and help, all I saw was the fire tornado sweeping through our neighborhood, the neighborhood next door, and through. So I'm not going to lie, an incredibly stressful, distressing, and traumatic situation. I've covered fires for 20 years, but I've never experienced anything like that.
That must have been heart-wrenching.
It was awful. I mean, there was a brief period of time when I wasn't sure that my husband and kids were safe. And when you saw that giant fire tornado, you know, you were just hoping and praying that they had gotten out of there. Relatively quickly, he told me they were, but of course they were terrified and crying and scared and all those things. And, so there was that part of it. I was sure our house was gone because I couldn't see how anything survived it. And when we went back to our home, it really is a kind of a miracle that I don't know how our house made it. I think maybe a helicopter dropped water on it. I'm not sure. There are some incredibly dramatic rescue stories and escape stories from my neighborhood and the neighborhood next door, Land Park. One of my neighbors was rescued. Three of my neighbors were rescued by a helicopter who was out there trying to fight the flames, saw them leaving the neighborhood, found a clearing, landed, and pulled them into the helicopter to safety. Another one, a dentist that lives two doors down from me, outran the tornado she came out in the neighborhood of Lake Reading Estates, which on the street that later was very hard hit by the fire. There's another man who hid under a bulldozer until fire crews came by and were able to pull him out from under there. It's remarkable. There were no evacuation warnings for our neighborhood.
So what is the status of your home now?
Our home is standing but damaged, but we are very, very lucky. The damage is not major. I would say half the homes in my neighborhood are gone, and it seems like they're either gone or they're okay. That the fire seemed very indiscriminate in that way, and it's on both sides of the street. There's not really a particular rhyme or reason. My house really should be gone, and it isn't. And there are some other houses that I saw. I don't know why it burned when it seems like it would have had the clearance and all those things in order to survive a wildfire. And where we are, all the roofs are tile, all the homes are stucco. It speaks to the ferocity of the fire.
Yeah, I think
how it was just reduced to nothing.
For some people, I think they've never heard the term fire-nado. Are you familiar with that? Have you reported on something like that before, a fire tornado?
Well, I think at the end of the day, this one's going to turn out to be a historic event. I don't think that there has been, you know, one larger than this. We've certainly reported on fire whirls before, which is really what it's called. We call it a fire tornado because it seems to be a clear description of what it actually was. Mm. Fire whirls are somewhat common. You know, you see them in fires. This was equivalent to an EF3 tornado. I think at the end of the day, they're going to find that this is perhaps the largest one on record. It was impossible to get your head around when you were seeing it. I didn't even know what I was looking at. When I saw aerials of it later, it was pretty remarkable. But from the ground, what you're seeing, it's so big, you can't even get your head around it at the time. It's just this giant, twisting, burning, flames are jumping all over, back and forth across the river. It was like nothing I've ever seen before, and it just came over the ridge and just poured like lava, quick lava, though, into Redding. And by the end of the night, you could see, you know, so much of the town was on fire.
Do you have employees that lost their homes in the fire?
No.
What's the status
None of, our
of the
employees
station?
Lost their homes. The station is fine. The decision was made. I was not here when the decision was made to evacuate. I was trying to connect with my family that night. But the management made the decision because the fire had been moving so quickly, and there were really law enforcement was so overwhelmed with managing the evacuations that they knew about, that I think out of an abundance of caution because of where we were located, that if the fire had jumped into another area called Hilltop Drive, the concern would have been that it would have been difficult to get everyone out of here safely. There's only one way in and one way out of the station.
So as we turn to help for the survivors of this fire, your station recently collaborated with the Salvation Army to raise some money. Tell me a little bit about that.
So we've been longtime partners with the Salvation Army here at KRCR for 25 years. We've been doing a regular food and toy drive for them twice a year. And so they're a trusted local partner that we know very well and that we've an established value relationship with. Immediately, of course, as soon as the immediate crisis was over, our company and our station wanted to figure out a way to help, and it seemed to us to make the most sense to partner with someone that we'd already partnered with. Plus, we knew the tremendous amount of immediate need that was out there for that organization. So we developed, in really less than 24 hours, the Drive Care for Car, and we held a 13-hour telethon, and in 13 hours, we raised $310,000, and on the day I sort of calculated, it was about $400 a minute that was coming in. And I actually think in the end it would have been more than that, but our phone lines were so jammed with people wanting to help that I don't think we got to everyone. And so we still have checks trickling in here and there, but it was meant to be kind of a one-day drive. And so to help the Salvation Army with those immediate and then medium and long-term needs for helping the folks here in the fire. They had already spent, the day we started, they said somewhere north of $100,000 just getting people here to help manage the disaster.
So will the funds be distributed to the community, or is this just helping to establish more Salvation Army funds to keep things going, so to speak?
So the Salvation Army in the interim, the drive was meant to help them pay for the immediate disaster costs. That a big chunk of that is getting people here. In a major disaster, you need a lot of boots on the ground in order to organize. You know, when you have 40,000 people evacuated, that's a tremendous amount of need that exists in terms of feeding people and clothing people and toiletries and diapers and all those things that, you know, you don't think about, you just take for granted on a daily basis, you know, living your life. And so they had already spent over $100,000 doing that. So we wanted to replenish those funds. We knew there would be some more need over the course of the next few weeks as we discovered more, you know, who was losing their homes and all of that. And then they also told us that they will be able to help with more long-term housing help for people, and some of those long-term community needs that we know from the Santa Rosa fires and the other fires that have hit California will exist.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us on Insight. We wish you the best and your newsroom as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I've been talking with Jennifer Scarborough from KRCR-TV in Reading. Now we're going to check in with another journalist covering another fire. And joining me on the phone is Jeffrey Parker. He's the general manager for KZYX Mendocino Public Radio. Jeff, thanks for joining us this morning.
Morning, Beth. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you. We spoke earlier with an official from CAL FIRE about the news that this fire in your backyard is the largest in state's history. How are the residents of Mendocino County handling the emergency?
Well, it's a dubious and creepy distinction to have, to be the largest fire by acreage in California history. Now just surpassed the Thomas Fire that was only just a few months ago. It was in December in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. That one reached something like 281,000 acres. We're now at 290+, and still growing. This fire is largely, at least the larger portion of this fire, the ranch fire, is still largely uncontained. As far as residents, there's a lot of, I think the biggest feeling here is, even though we've had, I think, 76 residences destroyed, the greatest feeling among residents in the affected areas is gratitude. The great work that's been done by firefighters and CAL FIRE to keep these fires, there's two of them, out of residential areas and towns. And I'm looking at a map of the Mendocino Complex fire. Actually, it's largely in Lake County now. Both of the fires started in Mendocino County, but it's now largely in Lake County, which is immediately to the east of Mendocino County. What I'm seeing is like a giant 40-mile-wide lobster claw, with the river fire, the smaller of the two fires, is kind of the lower claw, and the ranch fire is the upper claw, and right in between is Clear Lake, and this is one of the oldest kind of resort areas in the northern part of the state. It's ringed by the towns of Upper Lake, North Lakeport, Kelseyville, and the fire. The perimeter of these two fires burned to within 100 meters of almost all of these towns. Mm. And the firefighting effort was almost exclusively focused on holding the line and keeping doing bulldozer lines, doing whatever they could to keep the fire from entering these towns, the total population of which might be 30, 40,000 people. And they succeeded. We just in the last 20 minutes had another repopulation announcement. This is for an area of mainly what's being called the river fire, the smaller fire on Cow Mountain, an area of the towns of Blue Lakes, which is right on the border between Mendocino and Lake County, Bachelor Valley, Widder Springs, Saratoga Springs, Scotts Valley Road. These have all just gotten the news that they can repopulate because the fire danger has been downgraded from mandatory evacuation to advisory evacuation. So there's a lot of gratitude out there among people living in these areas.
What about the evacuations that are still in effect? Well, who is evacuated right now?
The areas under evacuation are the Cow Mountain area and this is a recreational area, so it's very, very rugged. There's not a lot of residential buildings in this area. It's kind of a recreation area on a mountain called Cow Mountain. And then the ranch fire has lots of evacuations on its southern and eastern and northern flanks. The northern flank is mostly Mendocino National Forest, largely unpopulated. But on the southern flank, we're looking at communities like Indian Valley and Paradise Valley, Even the fire is still very, very close to Clear Lake Oaks, which unfortunately lost 40 or 50 homes in the October Mendocino, the Redwood Complex fires just last year. So, you know, these fires are becoming, particularly in Lake County, they're almost an annual thing now. We've been talking to people who have been evacuated 7 or 8 years in a row because of these enormous fires that seem only to get larger each year.
Tell me a little bit about the direction of the fire right now, because we all know it's so unpredictable. But what are you focused on? What is the direction of the fire currently, or where is it moving?
Yeah, overall, the general trend and direction of the fires, and CAL FIRE puts out a statement in the morning and the evening, has been to the east and somewhat to the north. They're letting it, I can see the fire line on the entire northern flank. This is facing the Snow Mountain Wilderness area. It's completely uncontrolled. They're letting it burn in those areas. They have the whole fire ringed, but because those are unpopulated areas, they're not putting so much focus on stopping the fire in those areas. They're holding the line on populated areas. The populated areas at risk are those that are to the southeast and to the east of the ranch fire. And this is now already pushed into Colusa County. It's left part of the front lines of the uncontrolled fire edge are now beyond Lake County and into Colusa County, the next county to the east.
You know, you mentioned being grateful and the community being grateful. There must be a great sense of that coming from the community right now.
There is. It's times like these when community really bands together. But it's also times like these when community has the least capacity to do that. A huge problem for Lake County was that the two main roads out of the county to the west into Mendocino County, Route 20 and Route 175, were both closed for more than a week. So access to the fire areas, to the areas that were really needing evacuation, was closed off. So evacuation had to go in the other direction, to the south and to the east. And meanwhile, this ranch fire was burning, kind of keeping neck and neck with these evacuations, pushing them farther and farther to the east and southeast. So, as your previous interviewee mentioned, these things happen really, really fast. These fires, I have to say, though, were nowhere near the speed of either the car fire up in Shasta County or our fires here last October, which devastated four counties in the North Bay area, the fires in Sonoma County, Napa County, Lake County, and Mendocino County. The great devastation of those fires on October 8th and 9th, that overnight, happened within hours because the fires moved so swiftly, blown by winds that were, you know, more than 100 miles an hour, and just nobody had any warning at all. These things went so fast, and that's why the death count in Mendocino County and Lake County was so high. We lost 42 people, and obviously hundreds and hundreds of homes. Santa Rosa, which was I can't remember the name of that fire. They lost 5,000 homes in Sonoma County, but and they lost a lot of lives. But the lives lost there were probably mitigated by the fact that these were urban areas with lots of roads, lots of ways of getting in and out. And so the proportion of death to destruction was much, much lower. The Shasta fire is really sobering in terms of the swiftness with which it burned up there.
Jeff, we thank you for your time today and for your reporting on the Mendocino Complex fire as well. We wish you the best and wish your community the best and your newsroom as well. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much. It's what we're here to do.
That's Jeffrey Parker, General Manager of KZYX, talking about the Mendocino Complex fire. We have more fire coverage on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio. Yeah.